Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, doing good today, bro. How you doing?
I'm always making it happen. Let's give a quick shout-out to our sponsor.
Jake, do you need a great property management software for your rental portfolio?
I do.
PropertyZar is a web-based property management software designed for portfolios of all sizes. PropertyZar includes all the features of the leading software vendors at prices that is affordable for even the smaller portfolios. Whether you manage 10 units, 950 like us, or 10,000 units, PropertyZar's base entry point is really affordable for everybody. It comes with complete accounting systems in addition to calculating cap rate, cash on cash returns. With PropertyZar, you can track your assets, you can screen tenants, accept online payments, conduct on-site inspections, online applications. The list goes on and on, my friend, Mr. Yaki Boom Boom. Tenants can even submit work orders along with pictures via the mobile app. Schedule appointments and set unlimited reminders to all attendees. You can also set reminders to change the HVAC filters. Down here in Florida, we're in the summertime, bro. I don't know about you guys up north, but we're in the summertime down here. You got to change those HVAC filters.
I'm in Tennessee, now I'm up north.
Other equipment, bro. PropertyZar is one of the most user-friendly applications on the market, but just don't take our word for it. I want you guys to try it for F-R-E-E free. Find out why PropertyZar is quickly becoming the property management solution for all portfolios of any size, guys. And right now, our listeners can start a free trial. That's right, free, and no credit card required. Just go to PropertyZar.com/G-I-N-O. That's propertyzar.com/Gino.
You're the property czar.
Got to try it, right? If it's free, you got to try it. That's what I say.
It's I don't know about product. That, but today's guest is Joseph Goslin. Joseph is the founder of EBG Acquisitions, a multifamily investment group out of Plano, Texas. Joseph has been a real estate investor since 2005, hates residential, and seeks off-market value-add multifamily opportunities. So further ado, Joseph, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you, everybody, for having me.
Hey, it's our pleasure. 2005, let's take us back there and tell us how you got started in multifamily.
Yeah, so actually 2005, I started residential. You mentioned I don't like residential. That's, you know, that's how I got there. Accidental landlord, as a lot of other people started. Me and my wife were just a young couple, no kids. We bought a place. It was too big for us. So we decided, you know, right after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, of course, to keep it, rent it, and just stay in the little apartment that we were living at. That's how we got started. And then when you start seeing that income coming in and the benefits that come with real estate ownership, it kind of hooks you in. And so we got a little bit more into it. And then in 07, we moved to the States, and it was kind of like the big crash. And we realized that was one of the best times to invest in real estate, probably the best market in our lives. So that's where we got started, in the big crash.
So what was your background? Were you always in real estate, or you have a different background?
So no. So I come from IT. I have an engineering degree in software, and spent the last, I don't know, 17 years in a dead-end job. Not dead-end, right? I was growing through the ranks, but still, I call IT a little bit of a honey trap. It pays enough to keep you in place, to keep you afraid to take the leap out of it, but just not enough to really where I want it to be.
Dude, I'm going to hammer you for the next few minutes, because those are great points. Because you
were just, I love it, the honey trap. That's so cool, man. I've never heard that.
You were just uncomfortable to be uncomfortable, to say, you know what, I'm making $180. I'm just uncomfortable. If I lose this job, I'm going to lose my benefits. What made you say not become the honey badger anymore and say, listen, I don't want the honey anymore? What clicked in your mind? What made you do that?
So it was a combination of a few things, right? First thing is, it's also an industry that kind of burns you out. right? Day in, day out, midnight deployments, long hours, dealing with a lot of highly paid people that always complain, right? And then on the other side is I have built my real estate business in the background for a few years to the point where I felt comfortable enough transitioning income to income. So that's where I, that's where the two main factors.
Was it enough pain though? Were you feeling the pain? Because maybe, you know, maybe you didn't build the real estate. Maybe you didn't have that option. What would you have done? Would you have stayed in IT? What would you have done if you hadn't gone into real estate?
Good question. What really opened my eyes were I joined a mastermind group called GoBundance. And that's really where I started seeing possibilities. I started realizing that the scarcity mentality, the thinking about 401ks and stuff like that is not really going to sustain me in the future, right? Social Security went belly up 2016, right? Started spending more than they were bringing in. The 401k, in my opinion, is one of the biggest concerns that this country needs to look at in the next 15 to 20 years, because it's right now, this last year, this year is the first few years that people start retiring with a 401k quote unquote nest egg, right? A lot of people don't really know how to handle their finances. So when these people are going to get a big chunk of money, and now they're going to have to control when and how to sustain it, that's going to be a problem. Add to that the fact that modern medicine extends everybody's lives, and we're going to have a serious crisis in about 10 to 15 years.
Well, let me ask you a question. At 70 and a half, you have to withdraw money from your 401k, right? So nobody talks about that. So what happens when you have a lot of people over 70 years old have to take out money that they don't want to, have to be pushed into a higher tax bracket, and have to force selling in the stock market? So what's that going to, nobody even addresses, even thought about that. That's going to be massive, because my mom's going through it right now. Why does she need to pull out $4,000 out of her IRA and possibly bump her up into a different tax bracket? And that causes a sell. So for her to sell, someone has to buy those securities. So what do you think about that? Nobody talks about that. I think the 401k is the biggest scam going, if you ask me.
I agree. And I want to add to what you just said, right? So your mom is lucky enough to have to draw.
Yes.
A lot of people, half of Americans, 55% of all Americans have less than $10,000 in their retirement accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talks about this half, right? Mm-hmm. These guys are just not going to have enough to live off of. Mm-hmm. The other half that is getting forced to push out, this, and everybody keeps thinking about 401ks, it's tax free. No, it's not tax free. It's tax deferred. Mm-hmm. The man still wants to get paid, right?
So, that's right.
All those forced withdrawals are going to happen when you're 70 and a half, regardless of what the market is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. If you were 70 and a half in 2006 or 2007, just before everything blew up, then you saw your entire nest egg just decimate, right? Mm-hmm. It was blown up down to 20-30%. Mm-hmm. And now you still have to start drawing.
That's right.
That is a very big risk in my book.
That's right. So why did you move to the States? What made you come to the United States?
So I moved through work, right? Part of my software job moved over here to help bring another product to the States.
And what was the transition like? Did you like coming here? What were your thoughts about the country and the move itself?
So I visited the United States before, and I kind of knew that I want to move over. So when I started my career back home in IT, I was kind of aiming for a company that was able to transfer me over to the United States. That was part of the plan since I was about 17.
And give me your perspective of what you think, because I mean, the average person listening who is a citizen takes everything for granted, because I've spoken to a lot of guys who come from overseas, and the stigma on the news and everything is that the United States is not a great country and this and that. And I've heard from every foreigner who's moved here, they're like, I wish I moved here sooner. I wish, you know, so what is your take on living here?
Well, it sums up with everything in life is relative,
mm-hmm.
right? And when you grow up here, all you see is the challenges. Mm-hmm. But when you come from the outside where there are bigger challenges, right? Mm-hmm. Coming over here looks fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we moved over here, and I planned on moving over here because I knew I can afford a better lifestyle here. I could afford giving my kids more here than I would have back home. I can really take advantage of the endless opportunities that are only limited by my potential and nothing else, right? So this is really why I love moving to this country. I'm grateful for the opportunity to come over here, and I know that I can do for this country, right? And one of the things that pisses me off, right? So I was an officer in the Israeli Defense Forces, right? So I know what it is to do military service. What pisses me off is to see a lot of entitled people in the United mm-hmm. States that badger police officers and veterans and all these people, right? In my head is, first you got to give, then you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
abundance though in the country, there's so much abundance. You get all these kids, you know, growing up with their head up their ass, and they don't know what the hell is going on. They don't understand value, and they just take things for granted. So it's funny, you know, your perspective coming from another place, and then being appreciative, because I always, you know, feel, you know, humble and grateful to live in this country, and I just really appreciate hearing that. And I just wish, you know, some of the citizens, you know, shared that mentality to make, and let's just come together to make things better versus the bitching and moaning entitlement. But that's my two cents on it. So
I just wanted the listeners to hear that, because I've been talking to a lot of people who are Jake and Gino members who talk about moving from another country, whether it's Canada, whether it's Mexico, whether it is Israel, because we've had a lot of guys from Israel, and they all are like so thankful for coming here. And then you turn the TV on, it's like you would think that we're like, they don't want to come. Yeah. And I want to give a different perspective on that. And fortunately for us, we've only dealt with guys who are successful, who want to aim for success. So those are the people who want to come to this country. And I think we have to highlight that. That's important. The guys that want to come here are so thankful once they get here. They have so much to offer. So that's
right. I want to say one other thing for all the listeners too, guys. And this is overarching. This is very broad. But you are in control. You are responsible for your success. You are responsible for everything that happens to you. No one else imposes anything upon you. You are the end all. It's up to you to make it happen. No one else is taking care of you. If you figure that out and if you can get there, it's going to really impact your life in a positive way.
And let me take a spin on that.
Where the hell are we going with this show, man? Let's go.
I'm gonna bring it all around with what Jake said. Join a mastermind group. Joseph and I are both part of GoBundance. Find your own little niche of masterminds, whether it's 10 guys in your own neighborhood, get together once a week and hang out and talk shop. Because like-minded guys are gonna grow. If you're gonna, you know, hang out with 10 victims, you're gonna become a victim. But to help make it happen sometimes, maybe you need guys pushing you and helping you become accountable. Get on a list, start talking to people, and start figuring out what you want to do and where you want to go, and start finding people who are more successful than you and start joining that group. So that's been my success for the last couple of years. That's how I've been able to grow. So,
yeah, absolutely. You are the average of the five people you hang out the most with, right? Mm-hmm. So look left, look right, and average up.
That's right. I agree with that. Let's talk about multifamilies. Before we get into that, why don't you like residential real estate? Let's get into that question. Talk about residential and the transition into multifamilies. I see the body shifting. I see the tension going on. That's great. I love this question. So I need a deep answer that. Why don't you like residential real estate?
Okay. So I don't like residential real estate for two different aspects, right? The first one is I'm a licensed broker, right? So, we started doing a little bit of residentials at the beginning. And when I need to deal with decisions that are not fact-based decisions, right? All the emotional side of things. Well, I know it's a $500,000 house, but that wall is half a shade greener than I want to. So I'm not going to buy it. It's a $12 gallon of paint on Home Depot and you're skipping up on a $500,000 house, right? So I couldn't handle that. So that's one side of things. The other side of things as an investment, single families, just, we had a few doors. I still have a few. They're just too risky financially, right? So when I have a vacancy, then I have 100% of that risk. When there is no resident in that home, I pay the mortgage, I pay the bills, I pay the insurance, I pay the taxes, I pay somebody to release it, right? And I pay all of it. So now I have to start taking money out of my pocket in order to sustain this thing. A few years ago, one of my singles had to have foundation work done. And when you raise a 1970 house, all the cast iron plumbing just crumbles, mm-hmm. right? Because the only thing that was holding it was the pressure of the soil. And then we had a roof damage, and we had a water heater leak break, and a bunch of things in a period of 6 months. I had to cut $40,000 worth of checks on a single property, and it's all coming out of my pocket. Mm-hmm. When I, so too much risk for me, too much headache. Even if I had 100 of them, it's 100 tax bills, it's 100 insurance policies, it's 100 roofs, it's 100 everything to deal with. Multifamily takes that risk and mitigates it by taking one location, right? And if I have 100 units, I can have 10 vacant, still have money to pay the mortgage, still have money to pay salaries, still have money to maintain the property, still have money to pay my investors, right? No risk. No one needs to take money out of their pocket and dump it into the property. So for me, when I cut those $40,000 checks, I told my wife that's just not sustainable. And then I researched what the options are, and multifamily made the most sense to me.
So guys, let me sum it up with a golden nugget here. Higher emotions, lower intelligence. That's what it comes down to in life. And anybody who can harness their emotions, take a step back, got a lot of life coaching here, your levels of energy, where you're resonating. If you can take the emotions out of anything and think logically. See, the problem is people, you have to sell people on emotions, but close them with logic. That's how it ends up coming. So if you can get their emotional side into it and then just present it logically. But a lot of people, let's bring the media back again. We don't have solutions going on. We have emotions flying going on. So you're never going to get a solution based. So the higher the emotion levels are, the lower the intelligence. That's why I think residential is very difficult, because you have, you know, I'm going through it right now, a personal residence. You're going to be moving into this house. This is going to be part of your life for the rest of your life. Now, in multifamily, do you really care about the view? I always joke around with Jake. We always had a broker who brought us through a property. She's like, that's a nice view, isn't it? And I'm thinking to myself, the only view I want to see is the bank account. Any other view, I could care less, right? So I thought that was powerful. And to your point about single family homes, we had Dean Graziosi on our show a couple weeks ago. We were really honored and blessed to have him on. He bought 2,000 single family homes back in 2010, 2011. He's got 359 left. He's selling them out and he's going into multifamily. So he is the king of single family homes. And he's realized that it's difficult, even if you have property management, even if you have all the systems in place like he did, to be able to manage 2,000 single family. But the thing that saved him is he bought them right. So if you buy them right, you can still ride out the wave. I'm sure you bought your property right years ago, but now it's not the time to buy right. So I think it's, you know, there's a little bit more risk involved in what you said. So I totally agree in what you said. So thought that was powerful. So what was your first multifamily transaction? What was your first deal in multifamily?
So when I started my path in multifamily, there was a lot of frustration, right? So this is considered big boy industry. Right. And big boys club, and they don't let you in. And it's kind of catch 22. If you didn't have a deal already done, they're not going to talk to you. How are you going to get a deal done if they don't talk to you? Right. Mm-hmm. So I knocked on doors with brokers and everything, and I was getting some traction. I found a few back doors in, but I was really not being handed any reasonable deals. Right. I have a very strict criteria for underwriting things. I don't think that we are at the bottom of the cycle. I know that we're pretty much at the top of the cycle. So I build a lot of margins into my underwriting to protect myself from a downturn. And I couldn't find a deal that penciled. So I said, you know what? Hell with it. Right? I'm going to go out and source it myself. I'm a licensed broker. I know what I'm doing. So we did cold calling. We did postcards. We did yellow letters until I found, I just spoke to a few owners along the way. Most of them wanted ridiculous prices that just were not feasible for me, until I found the first owner that was reasonable, had a great product in a great location. And on top of it, we kind of started building this relationship with each other, and he agreed to do owner financing. So I got to go in at even less than 20% down payment. So that was a really fantastic deal to start with.
So let's talk about the first deal, but let's talk about your criteria. What do you look for in a market? What are your cash on cash returns? What are all your returns? What are you looking for in a deal that really excites you?
So there's a huge difference between, I'm going to buy this on my own, I'm going to buy this with a partner or a few partners, or I'm going to syndicate this thing. Mm-hmm. Three different models, three different financial models that you have to underwrite your transaction with. And because there's three different margin bandwidths over there, mm-hmm. right? When it's just myself, sometimes I can go down to a lower cash flow as long as I know that the property is safe and I'm getting some of it back, versus when I have to pay my investors and then pay myself, I need a bigger margin, right? So, and all depends on, well, can I buy it myself? Am I liquid enough to buy it myself? So this is really where it's a different underwriting. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking for, I'm a big believer in buying real estate. I honestly don't really believe in selling real estate if I don't really have to. So I'm looking, So I'm looking for long-term. Even in our syndication deals, the outlines are 7 and 10 years. So it's longer term than what you would see normally out there. And real estate is a long game. Ask anyone that bought a house 30 years ago, how is he doing today? He's doing great, even though there was a big crash somewhere in 07, 08, right? But ask someone that bought a house in 2006, they're barely back to zero now. So that's why you want to play a longer game. So when we look for something, we look for a great location. So I have three rules, buying real estate, right? It doesn't matter if it's a $20,000 house or $20 million community. First, you make your money when you buy, right? Two, location, because that's the one thing you can't change about a property. And three is buy for cash flow, because hope is not a strategy. Okay? And I stuck to these three, and so far they did not steer me wrong. And location is one of the critical things for us, because we look for something that has growth, that has economic drivers, that have the least amount of chances to get hit in the next correction. So really, that's number one. That's what we focus on. Everything else is just numbers. We put it into the Excel. We'll make the offer that we feel we can make the offer for. Right? So mm-hmm. so this is really how we look at properties. Now, in terms of benchmarks, right? We like the BNC band, right? We're not institutional that can buy A class. We're not willing to do war zones, right? So we'll not go to the D class bandwidth. So we stay in the BNC class. We prefer a little bit of value add so we can get better returns for our investors. Nothing really scares us, right? So this can be a small rehab, could be a major rehab. We look at anything in terms of that. We try to get to our investors cash on cash on average of double digits, but realistically with the market today, we could even go down to like 9 or 8%, depends on location, condition, right? Mm-hmm. It's a nicer property in a great location. We might go down lower. And we try to stay in the mid to high teens for IRR on a 5 to 7 year hold.
Okay. That's great. So that first deal you bought, was it a syndication or did you buy it yourself?
I bought it myself, right? So you said earlier I did buy right because we bought in 09 and 10. And so what I did is I refinanced my singles, took out the equity, tax-free because it's a loan, right? And rolled it over to my first multifamily, which was a 22 unit.
So, but that first deal you bought, owner financing, what were the numbers on that deal? What did that deal look like?
So we bought it for 1.6. It was a 2007 built, beautiful product, built like a tank, granite countertops. The previous owner was a custom home builders for decades. So he didn't know how to build anything but beautiful, right? So we really, really love this one. It's in a community that is in the wake of the huge growth that DFW is going through. So it was a no-brainer to pick it up. We did an owner financing. A little bit over a year later, we were able to refinance that out with over $500,000 in equity built into it.
Wow. So let's talk about the owner financing piece, because Jake and I were fortunate enough on our first deal to get owner financing. And guys, what he's talking about is a mom and pop, a custom home builder who should not be building multifamily and running multifamily. So bam, when you do the negotiations, you listen to the problem. This guy must have had pain written all over. He's had granite countertops for C-class tenants probably. So he didn't know what he was doing. So it's definitely a motivated seller. How did you convince him into owner financing?
So really, he was 80 years old, had no mortgage on the property.
Dude, the story gets better and better, man. 80-year-old, no mortgage, Custom home builder. Wow, you got the Nirvana of mom and pops. I'm sorry.
It was a huge opportunity. That's why we jumped on it. So being in the industry for so long, I didn't have to educate him what an owner financing is, right? It was really about relationship, right? So we met a few times. I kind of built that rapport with him. He's a phenomenal guy, right? 80 years old. He's the World War II kind of veteran. These guys, they don't make him like they used to. I'll be honest, right? Straight up guys, you know, he gives you a word, he's on it. Right, he's not gonna nickel and dime you. He's not gonna mess with anything. Right, just a really stand up guy, and so we just built that rapport, and we got to the conversation of, okay, I'd like to get in with a little bit less. I'll have cash reserves to operate. What can we do? And this is really where we got into this transaction. So what we did was basically, I didn't get in with 25%, but we did quarterly payment into the principal, mm-hmm. so we can within 2 to 3 years get to the 25%, which I was lucky enough to be able to refinance it out completely after a year or so.
And how is that cash on cash return on that property? How are the returns on that property?
Well, now that I have less than 50K into it, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's great. So are you looking to hold this property for long term? Have you done a cost segregation on this property? Have you written it off? So talk to us about how it's now.
Yeah, so we just got the cost segregation survey done. Mm-hmm. We're gonna file a form that goes back and allows us to take the previous year as well. So that's that one. And cost segregation, really, if you own a property over $500,000, you should really look into cost segregation. A lot of people just write it off without paying attention, but this is a huge tax advantage, especially for real estate professionals. I'm sorry, what was the other question?
I got lost because I'm thinking about cost segregation, and everyone on the call, if you want to be rich, do what rich people do. Hotels are doing cost segregations. Big real estate guys do. So just because you've got a $1 million property, don't do it. We've got three deals in the hopper right now. We're doing three more cost seg studies. I don't even know what, when I hear my residential bankers look at me and go, I don't understand this tax return. You've got so much loss. I've never seen something like this before. You know you're doing something right. Because if she's never seen it before, you want that because you don't want the run of the mill Fannie Freddie. So everybody out there, if you need somebody who does cost segregation, Jake and I have somebody who's really phenomenal. He knows what he's doing. He's very reasonable. Look into cost segregation. We did a podcast with Tom Realright. He's written a great book on that. Get yourself educated on it. It might not be right for you, but more often than not, I think it is right for you. So thanks for that tip, because you know that gets blown over, and that's a huge tool. I know Jake will probably want to chime in and say, hey, listen, cost segregation changed my life. Just talk, Jake, for a second. How did it change your life? Tell everybody how it changed your life.
Well, you know, I don't even know where to start, but the first year that we did it, I was a W-2 earner, and I don't know how much I got back, but I think it was close to 30 grand. Because mm-hmm. it was based on what I paid in. We did the cost seg. It helped me retire earlier. Literally, cost segregation probably advanced my retirement by 6 months to a year. So I retired quicker because of it. Like I said, you got the three stacks over here of cost segs. I think it's in year one, it's like $1.5 million that we can write off, something like that. It may be more. I don't even know. It's just because we have so much built up at this point. And to his point before, it's just you don't sell. There's no reason to sell this stuff. You buy, you cost seg, you buy again. As long as you keep buying, you keep pushing out the depreciation. The snowball just keeps growing. There's no reason to ever sell because your cash flow is going to keep widening, right? If you keep buying stuff, you keep cost segging these things, so you're deferring your taxes. You're getting the depreciation. I just don't think there's any other way to do it. I mean, you could, if you need to sell to make your rip, I get that. But if you can hold these things, buy them, keep cost segging and buy another one, cost seg it, that's how you guys are going to get rich. I mean, realistically, that's long-term generational wealth right there.
And I think one of the things that's going on with the market is people have realized this in the last few years. And I think that's why they're paying a little bit more. Because if you're a doctor or a lawyer and you're getting a 5 cap, it's still get better than getting 1% of the bank, and you're getting all those tax benefits. So people are overpaying for a lot of reasons, and I think this is one of the unhidden reasons that people are overpaying. That's just my opinion.
If you're a doctor and you're making $500K a year, but you're paying in $200,000 in taxes, a cost seg, and you become a real estate professional, cost seg that baby real quick, right? Yeah.
So, yeah. Uh-huh. So Joseph, let's talk about the next deal. How did you get into your next deal? After this one, you were like, dude, this is the, I've seen, now this is the honeypot, right? The honeypot was the IT job. Now let's switch over to the multifamily honeypot. How did you get into your next deal?
So this is really a snowball business, right? The more you do, the more opportunities come across your way. So once I got this one on the contract, I started getting the, oh, so now you're a closer. So come take a look at this and come take a look at that, right? Yeah. And I was still not on the very short list, but I was getting properties to look at. I'm sorry?
You're creeping up the list.
Yes, exactly. That's what it is, right? Every broker have the mass distribution list, the shorter list, the shorter list, the shorter list, and the top four, right? And if you get into the top four, you're doing great. So I know I am in the top four with a few of the brokers I'm working on. I know I'm not in the top four with a lot of other brokers, but we're working our way up there. That one was actually brought to us off market through our property management company. So they manage a few properties in town. They noticed a broker that they used to work with roaming a nearby property, asked them what's going on. He told them that sellers are considering selling. And then they just got me connected with that broker. And we got that one on the contract real fast. So
how big is that? How many units was that? And what did that deal look like?
So that was 102 units in Lubbock, Texas. We had to do syndication, right? At this point, it was a $1.4 million raise. I was not that liquid. That was my first syndication deal.
So let's walk through the syndication. Were you already sourcing investors? Did you have any investors? Or you're like, oh my gosh, I got a 120-unit deal. I got to run and get investors out. Talk to us about that process, that challenge first.
So, at some point, ignorance is bliss, right? I didn't know what I didn't know.
It's the story of my life, bro.
But I knew I'm going to go in and I'm going to go out swinging, right? So I was learning as I was going. I found a mentor. I talked to 5 or 6 different syndicators, and that helped me learn that there is a billion different flavors of syndication. So I kind of try to learn the different ones, ask the people, well, why do you do this and not that? How about this? How about that? And kind of help find the one that worked out best for me, right? And for the investor pool that I was talking to. And I picked a mentor that is doing just that. And this is really how I got started. And then my property management company helped me with the due diligence and all that. I started talking to mortgage brokers that the real estate broker referred me to. And then at the same time, I started talking to investors. And I can tell you the first syndication I did was I did everything, soup to nuts. And one of my biggest lessons from that is never do it alone again, right? Having a partner that can help carry some of the load is super critical. So anyone that's listening out there thinking about syndication, absolutely doable by yourself. Not recommended because of the load and the stress. I know my numbers because I keep track of everything. I had to talk to 176 different people in order to raise the 1.4 million. That's my number. And that wasn't easy. That was stressful. I had a W-2 while working all that. So that was also a very stressful time. At the same time, my last one that we're closing tomorrow is 97 units, 1.4 million raised again. Did it with a partner. We raised everything in about 3 days. So big difference, huge difference, right? So back to the first one.
I mean, other than your relationships and all, did you understand the process better? I mean, was that part of the thing? Because I think when everyone starts out in something, we're incompetent. was that first deal such an eye-opener to say, hey, I need to get my docs in order. I already have 176 people I talk to. I've already got a deal on the contract and done one. What was like? What was the nirvana, like that big difference that you saw on the second one?
So it's like, I don't know, riding a bicycle, right? Mm-hmm. The first time, it's a little bit clunky, right? You try to figure out your balance, you try to figure out what's this lever, what's that lever, and then the next one comes in, it's easier, and then the next one comes in, it's easier and easier. So you get your processes in place, you get your investors lined up. One of the mistakes I did in the first one was I didn't line up my investors before I had the deal, mm-hmm. which is why it was such a scramble. But mm-hmm. since then, I've already talked to enough investors. I already built a lot of relationship. I've expanded my network. And I was able to say, look, I'm already doing that, right? So it's really, it builds on each other. And it builds your experience. And between my network that I've developed and my partner's network, like I said, we were able to raise the same amount in less than 3 days. And still have investors that we had to push out saying, you're going to have to wait for the next one.
So what would you tell a guy who wants to syndicate their first deal? What would be the, I guess, the framework that you would say to them real quick? You know, first, give me 5 or 6 steps that I need to do if I want to syndicate a deal.
So the syndication has a life cycle, right? You got to find the deal. You got to underwrite it. You got to get it under contract. You got to do due diligence. You have to secure financing. You have to raise equity, close, transition, operate for 3, 5, 7, 10 years, whatever the period is, and then disposition, right? The sale of the property. That's the life cycle. What I tell people that reach out to me or they want to get started is figure out what gets you excited. What's the piece of this life cycle that you're most interested in? Some people love playing with Excels and underwriting deals and really figuring out the numbers. Some people love the relationship with the brokers and the sellers and sourcing the deals. Some people are really good analytical or have connections with mortgage brokers, right? And some people are operators. They get excited about operating a property for a long time. And of course, there's the equity raise, right? A lot of people are focused on this side of things, right? There's a lot of equity groups that all they do is raise equity. So it's really find where you feel more comfortable, find where your skill set is shiny, and then find partners that complement your skills, that can pick up the other pieces, right? But if you're not interested in being an operator, go find an operator and you do the other stuff, right? If you're an operator, but you don't have the network or you don't want to talk to people about money and raising money from other people, then find a partner that's their specialty. That's what they like to do, right? And then work together in a complementary set, not having two people with the same set of skills is not going to be a lot of value.
So guys, everyone out there, what he's talking about is having the abundance mindset. Don't have the scarcity mindset where, oh wow, the piece of the pie is small, I can only get so much. Because I always say 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing. And people, it takes so long for people to realize that. And I don't know, Jake and I have some pretty complementary skill sets, you know, as far as making it happen, as far as doing stuff. I think you can have complementary, but then at the end of the day, I think you have to have a visionary type and an integrated type. I always call it the connector, the executor, and the backbone. That's Mr. Len Giancola's saying. So I think you need to have that in your business model. But I like the way you reached out to mentors. When you reached out to people, did they give you a problem? Did they say, I don't want to waste my time with you? Or how did you seek out a mentor? Because everyone is always asking that. Because I'm getting the question now, Joseph, also. Everyone wants to pick my brain. And it's unfair for someone to say they want to pick my brain for half an hour. They bring no value to me. And then it's hard to answer somebody's question in 30 minutes. How did you go out and seek and find a mentor that you like to work with?
So I was lucky enough to be part of GoBundance, right? And there's a few syndicators out mm-hmm. there that I reached out to, and they freely gave me their time to talk to me. But I also reached out to people outside of the group, and I've never encountered someone that told me, I don't have time for you. No, mm-hmm. I will not talk. Mm-hmm. But everybody gave their time and talked to me. I try to pay it forward myself, right? I have people reach out to me every once in a while, and I'll sit with them for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, sometimes more, and I'll give back, right? And what I tell them is I don't look for anything in return, just pay it forward. When when you're successful and somebody reaches out to you, give them the time. But I do know that from a mentor mentality, right? When I wanted a mentor, I went out and I offered value first. Instead of asking, just give me your time, I said, I will do your underwriting because A, can save you some time and will give me more learning opportunity. I can be your boots on the ground anywhere in Texas and our nearby states, no problem. I will I'll make phone calls for you if you want, right? I will do whatever you need in return for that, that what you teach me, right? Mm-hmm. And when I decided on a person that I wanted to, there's a good book called Double Double by Cameron Harold.
Oh, I love it. Love me some Double Double.
And what Cameron said.
I got it right here. I'm reading it right now.
What Cameron says is find your A player and handcuff them, right? So when I found that mentor that I wanted to really follow their model and wanted to be where they are, I handcuffed them by giving them a piece of my deal. And it comes out of my share. It does not come out of my investor's pocket, right? And the idea was, okay, now I get to handcuff him to me for the next 5, 7, 10 years. And I get, first of all, if my investors don't get paid, I don't get paid, he doesn't get paid. So he has a vested interest to get my investors paid, right? The other thing is I get to see him grow. I get to see where he's going. I get to see the things that I don't know that I don't know yet. And I get another person on my advisory board that is invested in my success mm-hmm. because he gets a piece of it, right? So this is really the approach I would took. But first, bring value, then ask for something.
I love that. Before we get to the short questions, my last question is, how have you been able to build your teams since you've scaled up pretty quickly? What have you been able to do to build teams and build people around you?
So really, it's a relationship business. So you got to find the right people. You got to find the people with a similar mentality. And your key player is your property management partner. I know there's a lot of groups out there that preach to do self-management. I am not a believer in that. Personally, I think you want someone that has a lot of experience, someone that has the infrastructure to support you whenever you need. And that's really where I believe. So when I picked my property management company, I interviewed like 6 or 7 of them, and I found the ones that match my philosophy, right? One of our key philosophies are we are big believers in karma, right? We don't want to be slumlords. We feel that we want to give the best living environment to our residents, and karma is good for business. It comes back. So I found the right property management company, and they were able to help me with building the rest of the relationship. Mm-hmm. Real estate brokers, mortgage brokers, insurance agents, and so on.
I like
so that. That's how I built my team. And I look at it from the perspective of property management companies are like Olympic athletes, right? When you get an Olympic athlete, they're at the top of their game, right? Top 1% of the entire people in their field, but they still have coaches, right? It's not like the coach can run faster, throw the ball further, swim longer, right? But a coach brings accountability, brings outside perspective, 50,000 foot view, right? And that coach that gives that Olympic athlete 3% more efficiency, that's how you get the goal, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I work with my teams. That's what I do with my property management, my regional, my on-site managers is they're the Olympic athletes. My job is to support them and bring that extra 3 to 5% in efficiency.
Very nice. I like that. What would you say your best habit on the personal side of things, your best habit for success is, something that you do on a daily or weekly basis?
I think my best trait is just persistency, right? I don't give up. My ratio is about 200 to one. So for every 200 opportunities that come into my inbox, we'll close on one. That means there's a lot of frustration. You have to pass on a lot of opportunity that you see other people pick up. You see other people pay for those.
It's frustrating, isn't it? Because we go through the same thing. It's frustrating, man.
It is, but you got to be persistent. You got to stick to your numbers. You got to know that emotions cannot play a part in this, right? It's math over emotions. So persistency is probably the one thing that gets me through, and I use it every day.
I want everybody on the call to write this down, really let this soak in. We talked about it on our call yesterday, Gino, where so many guys get started, and then it takes 6 months, it takes a year, it takes 2 years to get the first deal, and then they quit. And it's like, guys, you got to stick in there. And you know, to your point in the beginning, you don't have credibility when you start out. The brokers don't want to talk to you. They treat you like shit. It's hard, right? No, but it is. It's hard in the beginning. And if you don't stick with it and you think it's impossible, look, three guys on the call didn't start in real estate, you know, ended up in real estate and are now staying in real estate because we stuck with it. I always say the best thing that Gino and I ever, that we did from the beginning is that we didn't quit. We got a lot of rejection. We were told we were idiots. We were told we were crazy. We were told to get the hell out of here, but we stuck with it and we got it. And now we're sitting on over $50 million in real estate.
Dude, I'm still told I'm an idiot. People still call me an idiot, so it doesn't matter.
Call me an idiot every day. I'm still going to kick your ass and outwork you. So bring it on, biatch. No, seriously, guys, I just think that's so important. I didn't want to let that point just kind of gloss over because I think that's probably one of the, you talked about a lot of great stuff, but in the big scheme of things, that's probably the most important thing that's been discussed on the show so far. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. What about your biggest mistake in multifamily?
What I mentioned earlier, doing everything by myself, that was a mistake. That was painful, right? But lucky for me, I didn't pay for it, right? I just bulldozed my way through it, but that was painful. And it added stress, not just to me. My family took a lot of time, right? I did it on top of my W-2, so that was weekends, nights, afternoons, meeting with investors, staying on the phones. So that was one. The other one was not talking to people about, I'm going to do this thing, and this is how it's going to look like, before I actually had one under contract. So I started really late in the process. So in that perspective, if you're going to do syndication, start talking about this with everybody you can talk about. Find this sample deal, right? And I've always told my investors, use my transaction to build your business. I'm okay with that. I don't have any problem with that. Like Gino said earlier, the abundance mentality.
Yeah, I like that. You know, it's funny because, Gino, I was actually talking about with this with Rick yesterday, and we call it the I'm a mentality. When we started, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do everything. And then that's how we started out. And I was literally, I don't know if you know who Jim Clayton is. He started a huge mobile home business, you know, back in the day. He was financing our fifth deal or something like that. He started a bank at, you know, at a certain point. And I'm sitting there, you know, I'm young, I'm energetic, and I'm like, you know, I'll do this, I'll do that. If I have to take the checks to the bank, I do that. Whatever it takes, right? And I'm just like, you're going nuts. And he's like, how the hell are you going to scale? I'm like, what are you talking about? I was like, I'm working hard. Don't you want to hear that I'm working hard? And he's like, no, get a freaking check scanner in the bank. Get some online payments going. I mean, this is like, we're 500 units in, and we were just getting into online payments and check scanners. It was so stupid. And then I realized, I'm like, holy shit, we need to work on our business, not in it. And then I literally pulled the e-break, and we just started, you know, pounding systems, pounding the scale, and building these things out, and that's what really changed. Oh, here comes the G Daddy! Here comes the G Daddy!
I gotta tell this story. Let me share this story with everybody. My partner there had the opportunity to fly in a helicopter with Jim Clayton over the properties, and he didn't do it. And I was living in a
New York. You acting like I shut it down, man.
I was going to get on the plane in New York within a day's notice and be on a helicopter flight with Jim Clayton. Didn't happen. Never happened. It had a little bit of, cloud cover and all. I would have rescheduled. But actually, it was great what you say about it with mentors. Jim Clayton is the busiest guy in the world. He sold his company to Warren Buffett in 2003 for billions of dollars. He actually got in a car with Jake and was driving around. So we're adding value to him because we're getting a great deal on the contract. And he added value to us because you get in a car with him and you listen to his model. He loved our model, the mom and pop. He totally got it because he's in that space. So for us, it was like an honor to be part of him. And like you said, it was a great deal for us to close and just to be part of that whole transaction. Don't you think, Jake?
Oh man, and just spending the day with him, and it was so funny because the guy's I think he's worth $600 million, something like that. And, mm-hmm. he's talking about, going out, doing this, that, and the other thing. And he's like, I'd rather be doing this all day, going out looking at deals than out on the lake. Like, that gets boring. He's like, let's go look at some more deals. He's like, what else you got in the pipeline? So it's just, I think he's in his 80s and he's still out there hunting. It's just, it's great. Yeah, love that. So you recommended Double Double. Any other book recommendations for the listeners?
Yeah, so I think every business owner, it doesn't matter if it's our business or e-commerce website, right? I think should read a book called Profit First. It's a really interesting book, not very familiar to a lot of people.
I've read it. It's a great book.
It's a great book. It's about, especially with seasonal businesses, it's mm-hmm. critical for them to read this book. So I love that book. I love Gary Keller's The One Thing, right? If you're looking at I want to do multifamily property, but I've never done anything this big in my life. How do I ever get started? The One Thing basically is a blueprint of how to do that. Mm-hmm. So I really love these two books.
What project are you excited about right now?
I wish you asked me that yesterday. We were looking at a 600 unit portfolio. But unfortunately the area we discovered was a little bit rougher than we like to be in. So we had to pass on that one.
What city was it in?
Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. But it was just too rough for us. So we had to kind of gracefully bow out from that one. But we're looking for our next one. So right now, we have a property closing tomorrow and then, we're actively looking for the next transaction. To come in.
That's great.
Very nice. How can listeners get a hold of you?
So I have a website, abgacquisitions.com. Everybody can find my contacts over there, phone, email. Feel free to reach out to me.
And GDAD, I think you got a little promotion you're running today. What is that?
Well, we've got a couple of promotions. I want to, invite Joseph. We're having a live event in October 6th and 7th in Nashville. It's going to be a two-day weekend multifamily. We call it multifamily mastery. We did one last year in November. It's going to be an awesome place to get everyone together. We had a great time last year. We're going to be expecting 300 people at this event, all our vendors, our team members. We got about 10 or 12 great speakers there. So, that's the first event. Go to the Jake and Gino website, check it out. It's under products. And the second one is Jake and I have been creating the products for our academy. I've got a coupon code. Use the word ELITE, ELITE. Go to the website, jakeandgino.com. Click on the Wheel of Our Profits Academy product. Type in that. You'll get 20% off. We're growing the base. We've got people. It's a great ecosphere, Jake. I love it. We have a private Facebook group. We have weekly live calls. It's a great way to interact. Like Joseph said, you want to be held accountable. It's not about just the education. It's about surrounding yourself with two guys who are doing it, who are giving back, and want to hold you accountable. The more deals that our students do, the better we are. And it's all about giving back. We've got guys that our vendors are just getting, people from us, and it's just making us stronger and it's getting us built. It's bigger. And that's what I love. I love to give back. I'm financially free right now. I don't have to do Jake and Gino, but I love talking to people. I love networking with people and I love just putting people together. And that's what it's about. And like he said, karma will come back and bite you. So if you do the right thing, you pay it forward, people are going to help you out and you're just going to get bigger and bigger. And the podcast is one of the things, Jake. Remember, we started this 2 years ago. We didn't know where we were going to go. And now people are reaching out to us, giving us these amazing ideas, whether it's getting a cell phone tower, whether it's sourcing Chinese products, whether it's, I don't know, there's so many different ideas. It's just so, just give back. That's what I say. Just think about what you want. Strive to become financially free. That's the first thing. Once you become financially free, you can get on a podcast with Joseph, Jake, and I, and the sky's the limit.
But wait, there's more. The G-Daddy told me before the show to also mention, if you email him at gino@jakeandgino.com and send a screen grab of your iTunes review, the G-Dad is going to send you a free book, Wheelbarrow Profits.
That's right. Free download of the book.
Just giving it all away. Giving away the farm, Joseph. You got to get this guy.
He motivated me. Joseph motivated me with the mentor thing.
Joseph, he's just giving away too much, man. Come on, where's Profit First? Say something to him for me. Will you, brother? Help me out.
Don't say anything to my wife. My wife already says, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, it's okay. We can give back. When you can give back, it's your duty to give back, right? So it's all about the go-giver, right? The go-giver mentality. Give more than you can get, right? Right, bro?
Yep.
I love it. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Joseph. We'll see you soon, okay?
Thank you, guys. It's been an honor.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.